This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right. Welcome in to a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we sit a mere 8 days away from NFL Draft 2024. That was my built-in that was sound effect.
Your explosion as you're walking towards the camera.
Pyrotechnics, things are just blowing up and exploding. They really should do that, you know, just do like the slow-mo walk up with the explosions behind
them,
like you see in the movies, and there's Mel Kiper striding to the desk along.
Caleb Williams coming down the tunnel behind him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll get there.
It'll be entertaining.
We'll get there. What'll happen? They'll put it on a green. They'll put them walking down a green screen, and they'll put all that behind them.
Yeah, you can do that.
CGI.
We've seen that somewhere else before.
Everything else is fake. Why not make the walk fake?
Sure. There's some goings on around the league. We'll get to that in short order. I'm really hoping Detroit puts on a good show. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I'm sure they will. And let's face it, it's not Detroit. It's the NFL. I mean,
they try to incorporate.
There's like, it's not like they're
the
working
city in which they're operating.
It's they're not like working within a budget.
Well,
right?
True.
I mean, what do you want?
True.
I want cranes. I want explosions. I want fireworks.
I want a giant Ferris wheel that can roll down the street.
Right. I want a 300-foot Ferris wheel down Main Street in Detroit. Okay. We'll see if we can do it.
Made of neon.
We'll do it. We got it. Did you hear that? All right. Write it down.
Neon Ferris wheel.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
That's the shot I want.
I want parachuters.
Right. No, Detroit's going to be great.
I want every pick to come in with a parachuter.
Well, let's face it. Here's where we're at.
We'll have a remote unit on a plane.
There's certain towns. Detroit's not one of those towns because they have had a Super Bowl. Buffalo's not going to get a Super Bowl because, you know, they'll tell you because we don't have enough hotel rooms. We don't have blah, blah, blah. Go on and on and on and on. We could get the draft.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So we could get the draft. So we get something like that. But this is, you know, I like it that they're, you know, they spreading this thing around. It was in New York every year for a long time. And they started moving it around. It's a great idea. I'm all about it. Let's go to, you know, you and I aren't driving over there.
No, we got
to
work.
We're going to work. Well, we could drive over there and work. That's my point.
Oh,
but
take the show on the road?
Yeah, let me tell you. All right, how, now even if it happened during the trade, like if it was the Chicago Bears, if we had traded for somebody's first and all of a sudden we got the first pick of the draft, do we take the show over there? I think we got to, right?
Yeah, I suppose. Because then you'd throw the first pick on the show and.
Yeah, come on, right?
Yeah.
We'd take the show on the road. Jay, we would take the show on the road, right? It's not in the budget. That's a good one.
Fiddlesticks.
We would go. We would be there.
Foiled again.
Right. That would be fun. I'm not. Listen, I want to. I know
people.
You're going to be doing the drag. You're going to be on live streaming and stuff.
Yeah.
For the draft, that first round, first night, anyway. And we'll be doing
and
our show.
Night.
I think on first day one of the draft, we're on for 3 hours. There'll be Sabres live.
Be a run up.
Right. So we'll do that. But I have not been told yet that I've got any responsibilities in and around the building. They're going to give it to the professionals, like you and Maddie. So I'm going to be, you know,
kicked up with a beer in your zero gravity chair at home.
A beer and a cigar. Let's go.
Yeah.
A beer, a cigar, and buddies.
Out on the veranda.
Me and my buddies will be doing it. You know, I'm thinking, unless I get the call.
Okay.
And I have to work, which I should have gotten by now.
Well, you'll be back on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to pull one off, you know, but yeah, I'm kind of looking forward. That might be our Twitter question for tomorrow. Do you have draft plans?
Do you tailgate draft?
Do you draft gate for the
Do you watch the draft in your driveway with
your
fire
friends.
Pit and a big screen hooked up to a portable generator?
Right. I'll tell you what, not at number, and here's the thing, not at number 28 I don't.
It's a bit of a wait.
But if you're like Ed Oliver, 10 or above, yeah, I think you got to, don't you? Like in 2018, weren't we all doing that?
Well, if your team is in the top 10, you're pining for hope anyway.
Weren't we all doing that anyway in 2018?
Sure.
Because you knew they were going to, you know, let's go, because there were like five guys in the pool, and you had to get one. So I was, that was a big deal.
That was.
I was actually emceeing the party here in the building. They had a huge, you like there's 3,000 people in this joint.
Oh, yeah. You can pack them in here.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
So that we did that for Joshy Man, but and Tremaine.
I remember I introduced Marcel Darius to the fans waiting here in the field house in 2011. And let's just say I'm short to begin with. I looked supremely smaller,
bro,
standing next to that guy.
Stand between Tremaine and Josh. Dude.
I just pictured that. That is glorious.
It was.
Yeah.
It was awe-inspiring. I was like, it was
crazy. I walked up there with Marcel, and I'm standing there going, I must look like I am from the shallowest end of the gene pool that is out there.
You look
imaginable.
You look like a world-class soccer player, though.
I don't think I even look like anything like that either.
Messi, you're taller than Messi.
By 2 inches.
So, you know, you got that going for you. You're in the wrong sport.
Well,
you should be,
the problem is I'd never had skills that came even close to what he had at age 10, let alone what he does now. It's an interesting time, and people will be waiting with bated breath to see what the Bills add, especially, you know, in the wake of the Diggs trade, and people feel there's a void to be filled there. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
It's, 8 days away.
It's getting closer.
8 days away.
It is getting closer. Tomorrow we're 1 week. Let's go. Finally.
And there is some draft visit news that we need to pass along as we go around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And we'll begin with the latest Bills 30 visit that leaked out. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reporting that the Bills hosted Iowa defensive back Cooper DeJean on a 30 visit. He also visited the Steelers, the Eagles, and the Seahawks. He is expected to be a late first-round pick at best, a high second-rounder at worst. And I think the reason these visits are happening so late in the game is because he still had to test. He had one of the last pro days. I think it was April 9th or 10th. Just happened. So then he had to cram his pre-draft visit schedule in before the deadline, which I think it was just this week that it came up. It might have been yesterday.
Right.
That was the last day for visits. Or maybe it might be today. Forgive me. It might be today, the last day that players can do 30 visits.
1 week shy of the draft.
Yeah.
So that makes some sense.
So he was rehabbing all the way up to his pro day because he didn't do anything at the combine. And did very well at his pro day. I mean, he had some great numbers that, you know, were fitting of where people believed his draft stock would be. And I don't know about you, but every time I watch him on tape, even though he played corner for the Hawkeyes, I see a safety. I see a safety when I watch Cooper DeJean. And I know there are some clubs who believe his best fit in the league is as a safety. For whatever reason, whether you don't think he has the hip flip transition or maybe he's a little choppy with his technique as a corner, but that guy would give you uncommon versatility at the safety position, and I think that's where he's probably most valuable at the NFL level.
And Bills fans have this affinity for, you know, because of Poyer and Hyde and their stretch here in Buffalo, we feel like we have an affinity for that position and how important it can be if you've got good ones.
Yeah.
And I think if you're the front office and any front office who's picking guys, we're going to talk a lot about this in these coming next few days before this draft really kicks off, is how close and how much is it going to be that the Bills are close enough to being a roster that they can take the best guy out there, no matter what he is. Now, certainly, no matter who they take, if it's a wide receiver or you name it, they're going to tell us that he stood out on their board and he's the right guy. They're going to do all the right things rhetorically, you know, to tell everybody that it was the right guy at the right time.
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem. If they get a guy that can step in and start for this squad, I don't care if it is at safety or what have you, you got to take him. If there's a guy that can start on your team at any position,
you got to take him on that board.
Well, that's accounted for in the value on the board.
That's right.
Why they get the grades that they do.
So if it turns out and all of a sudden you're drafting a guard or something like that, somewhere you got some depth, and I still think you got to take that because it's an ongoing process. And you're still not done with your roster even after you draft. If you do indeed draft 10 picks in this draft and don't trade any of those picks away and stay where you're at and get them, or if you have more draft, you draft for more picks, it's an ongoing process. It's not over even after this draft. They still got a ton of guys they got to sign, a ton of guys. So I hate to think, and I don't think they will, I don't think Brandon Bean is going to deviate from his overall philosophy of trying to take the best guy out there. But need always rears its head when you get this close to the draft and you've got a roster that is not filled out.
In an effort to further read some of the tea leaves in terms of what direction teams could be heading, other pre-draft 30 visits, Cincinnati hosted Washington wide receiver Jalen McMillan, which to me gives indication that they're looking to add a receiver potentially in round 2, not round 1 at pick 18 ahead of the Bills. Bengals do need help on the offensive line, and with those premier offensive tackles expected to come off the board in round 1, Cincinnati's right in the sweet spot to get one of the top 3-4 offensive tackles in the draft, so they very well may go that route at 18, then look for their future replacement for T. Higgins after the 24 season. They're looking for their future number 2 for 2025, perhaps in round 2, where Jalen McMillan is expected to come off the board. Good player.
Yeah. The Bengals, every team is kind of – they're all similar. I mean, they all have the same – they got to build a roster from somewhere. And I think if you look at Cincinnati, with Ja'Marr Chase – at the top of the food chain, if Cincinnati looks around the league, I don't think they did the right thing in franchising T. Higgins, because they don't have to pay Ja'Marr Chase just yet. They can wait. But T. Higgins, they can hang on to for this year, get the best out of him as he's trying to posture for free agency.
Try to make one more run.
And then next year, do what the Bills have set that trend of doing since Brandon Bean's been the GM. You sign a guy out there on free agency, it's a one-year deal. Just get a one-year deal guy.
Or get a young,
next
promising
year.
Guy in the pipeline this year, and then he's
maybe
ready to assume the number 2 role next year.
If the guy's got traits, yeah. And he can come back and maybe try and start to spread his wings. But you got to get a guy that can contribute. I don't think if he's not getting on the field this year,
Jalen McMillan could get on the field year 1 for the Cincinnati Bengals as the third receiver, fourth at worst, because let's not forget, they also lost Tyler. They lost Tyler Boyd.
Tyler Boyd, yeah.
Who's a free agent.
I don't think
Tyler Boyd signed somewhere else? I don't know that he has.
I do not know.
I don't think he did. Let me check. I'll check while you're pontificating.
I just think that there are ways that you can – short-term role players are blown up in the NFL with one-year deals now. It's good money. It gives them a chance, and the club knows they're going to be highly motivated to get another deal from another team. And it doesn't crush their cap in the future. So that's kind of the going thing now. And I think if you're Cincinnati, you got to look at yourself saying, Tyler Boyd's gone. But we got Ja'Marr Chase. We got T. Higgins. We get any kind of help, anybody with a pulse that can just,
he's still out there.
Run a hitch route.
Not expected to be back with the Bengals, though.
Yeah. I just think the Bengals are sitting, as long as Ja'Marr Chase is at the top of that food chain and Joe Burrow's throwing it, let's face it, they're going to have a chance.
Other pre-draft 30 visit to pass along, the Giants hosted Oregon quarterback Bo Nix and South Carolina quarterback Spencer Rattler on 30 visits this week. Being interested in these prospects, Steve, would indicate the Giants are at least considering a trade back from 6, or perhaps not even looking at a quarterback in round 1. Maybe they wait until round 2.
No.
You don't think they're going to do that?
They're lying.
I think they could move back from 6 somewhere.
And get one of those guys, Spencer Rattler.
Spencer Rattler you could get on day 2. But Bo Nix, you slide back from 6 to maybe, 11, 12, 13, somewhere in there.
All right. So you're thinking they're in the hunt for guys like
There's like, some people like who think Bo Nix might not go in round one.
Right.
All you need is one team, but
Mike Penix. They're thinking Mike Penix will be there. Or
Penix
Bo
has been
Nix.
Linked to the Raiders.
I don't know. There's absolutely no doubt the Giants are in the market for a quarterback.
The question is, if four come off the board in front of them, one through four, are they looking to move out of there based on the value on their board? They might be.
Maybe. Maybe.
You know, that's what these visits say to me. Looking at Bo Nix, having Bo Nix in your building, Spencer Rattler in your building, means they believe just as much as some other people do in the media that quarterbacks could go one through four, and they're there sitting with nobody at six, and then it's time to get out.
Well, there's guys in there. And listen, I like Mike Penix better than I like J.J. McCarthy, but J.J. McCarthy's getting all this play because he won.
They're talking about him possibly going to Washington at two now.
J.J.?
Yes. They got him in the mix.
No, J.J. will
with Jaden Daniels
no, here's
and
how
Drake
it's gonna
May.
Work. Here's how it's going to work. You forget.
It's off the chain with J.J. McCarthy. I mean, we've jumped the shark three times now.
The Chicago Bears, a long time ago, drafted a Michigan quarterback number one overall. Or number one in the draft. He wasn't number one overall.
No.
Years, decades later, that same quarterback came back and led Michigan to a national championship. And that quarterback is now available once again. The Bears may take that guy.
No,
they're the Chicago Bears.
They're not going to take him.
Oh, my gosh. They aren't going to take him. But no. That's funny to think about. The Bears are going to
Can you
bear.
Believe he's getting consideration for number two now?
Yes, it always happens. You know what? It might be a smokescreen, too.
Yeah, it's lying season.
They might be. They might be saying, "Yeah, you know, we might do." And people might say they can jump up and get Drake May then, because you know, Washington could trade back two spots, thinking they can still get J.J. McCarthy, right? And somebody will give them some draft picks to go up and get Drake May. That kind of who knows? This is all.
A lot of conjecture.
When you start hearing crazy stuff like this, like crazy visits and all this, it's all that's what you start thinking about. If it makes no sense, that's because it's supposed to.
Well, Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler make some sense as to contingency plans for the Giants. If quarterbacks go one through four, Giants stay at six, don't get one of the top four. I
just
see them
this.
Looking to move out.
Spencer Rattler's 6 foot 2'11".
Yeah, he's going to be a day two pick at best, probably early day three.
Bo Nix is 6'2", 214.
They're not getting picked sixth overall.
They're not getting picked sixth overall. Now, hey, Baker did. So this, you know.
Yeah. And he's 6 foot and change.
So, okay.
Kyler Murray
did.
First pick in the draft.
So did Bryce Young. And I'll just say those names and leave it.
Yep. Elsewhere in the NFL, we saw the big story about how Patriots owner Robert Kraft reportedly warned Falcons owner Arthur Blank not to hire Bill Belichick because he couldn't be trusted. That's an ESPN report. The Patriots have since denied said report. There is other news from ESPN. They say Bill Belichick has told confidants he would be interested in coaching the Cowboys, the Eagles, or the Giants. Is it any surprise that Bill Belichick went exclusively NFC East here, number one. Number two, went with one of the more volatile owners in terms of kicking coaches to the curb in Jerry Jones. B, another coach who, by most accounts, underachieved last year and has got two new coordinators and is going to be on the hot seat in Philly this year in Nick Sirianni. And C, the team where it all started for him,
the Giants,
the
New York
where he knows
Giants.
He has people in the front office, well, upstairs in ownership that still have respect for him.
I think as well, let's face it, he picked those teams because they're head coaches who there's a lot of pressure in that division. It's the big four cities, Philly, Washington, New York, and Dallas. There's a lot of pressure in that in those cities on the head coach. And those guys have been there for a minute.
Yep.
And those three spots are ripe to be switched out. ripe. And he knows it.
He's no dummy.
No dummy.
As Red Fox used to say on Sanford and Son, you big dummy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So somehow this guy is not going to coach on the sidelines and be a frequent headline through the course of the 2024 season. You know it's going to happen, right?
Right.
Every time a coach is on a hot seat, his name's going to surface immediately. Immediately.
Right.
He is going to be in the headlines at least four or five times between like Halloween and Christmas.
Oh, yeah. And he'll probably parachute into like a Manning cast, if not be a regular guest.
Well, he already
guest.
Signed a deal with them, didn't
right.
he?
Right. He'll be a regular guest on that, or if not, at least a, you know, occasional appearance on network television as an analyst. It's interesting. And I see things, you know, Brownie and I sit here, I'm a broadcaster more now than I ever, you know, than an ex-athlete. It's easy to transpose what you're sitting there at CBS or Fox or NBC or ESPN or name the broadcast partner, you know, Prime, Amazon Prime. Like, okay, how can we get Bill Belichick, A, to say yes, and B, what would it look like in his best environment?
Yeah.
Where would we put him so he could
loosen up and
yeah.
have a personality?
Right. Yeah. First of all, you slip him something in his drink first to get him loosened up, right? I don't know, right? You gotta figure a vehicle for him to, you know,
to get the most out of
yeah.
him.
Yeah. It's not sitting next to, you know, James Brown and Bill Cowher and right. Boomer. You know, it's not that, right?
No,
it might be an NBC couch. It might be Sunday night.
Game.
It might be Sunday night football in America, because it's just Rodney Harrison,
Tony Dungy,
it's those two guys. Yeah. Maybe something like that. Just Bill by himself with a guy, right? Just
best
to say,
best of luck to
you know, the
producer.
Guy's just got a stick and. Say something.
Best
you know.
Of luck to that producer.
Yeah, right? The guy just pokes Bill, says, say something. Do like that.
Please be interesting.
Yes. I think that's the likely scenario. No. Right? But let's face it. If he's out of football this season, which it looks like he's going to be, if he's out of football next season too, he's done. Mm. So he's got to find a way to get back in it.
Right.
Right?
Which is why he's maintaining a presence in the television world of football.
Right. Exactly.
Miami Dolphins are going to pick up the fifth-year options for Jalen Waddle and pass rusher Jalen Phillips.
Yeah, that is not a surprise.
Not a surprise on the Waddle front. Maybe a little bit more of a surprise for Jalen Phillips because he's coming off the Achilles injury, but all signs are pointing to a pretty positive recovery for him. We'll see if he still has the same burst, you know, made him a high draft choice. Here's the other thing. You still got the Tua extension coming down the pike here. Now you're on the hook for sizable money for both Waddle and Phillips. Are you going to be able to find a way to extend both of those guys too? I don't know. You're assuming Tyreek could be out the door after the 25 season, so maybe you can make it work, pulling that money off the books. Because Tyreek has said, "But I hit 30, I'm done."
Right.
So
I'll tell you this though. Think about where you're at if you're Miami. It's a real big question. One, you've got Tua, who's been good. At moments, he's been really good, really elite, because of a lot of people believe it's because of the weapons around him. Tyreek, Jalen Waddle.
Well, and the scheme helps,
and
too.
Yes. And his head coach is kind of giving him what he can do. You've got that guy at quarterback who you're trying to coach around and scheme around and weaponize. Or going out into a wilderness again trying to find a guy.
Yeah.
That's hard. But I'll say this. It says something when you talk to Bills fans, Bills fans, Patriot fans, Jet fans who are going, I kind of would be okay with them extending Tua. You know? Your division rivals are like going, he doesn't scare me.
At the same time, the Dolphins are like, you have to give him the extension because the guy just led the league in passing. He's been ultra productive. You can, believe me,
I think it's not a
difficult argument for people like you and me to say, yeah, but the guy doesn't come up clutch in big games because
he's limited.
To this point, he hasn't.
He's limited physically.
Yeah. Now, supposedly, he has trimmed down and is not as heavy. Last year, he kind of insulated himself with extra weight to take the hits. Now, he's trying to trim down and slim down so he's more mobile. We'll see if that's a wise choice.
Okay. All right.
But at least he's not.
There's a lot in that. There's a lot in the Tua decision. I don't think it's that easy. I think he's in the realm of like a Kirk Cousins guy.
Yeah.
It's you know, he's got
Your
so much around
can be
him.
Very productive that way.
Certainly he has done everything they've asked him to do, but well, that can't be the case. That's not really true. I don't think he's elevated guys around him. I think they've elevated him. That's the sense I get.
Yeah.
And they're paying a guy $30 million. They're paying a wide receiver $30 million who's an elite difference maker in the league. They got all kinds of talent around him offensively, speed and all that. I just don't know. And you're going to pay the guy. It's a Daniel Jones situation right here. It's even worse because Daniel Jones only put up like mediocre low numbers.
Worse.
Tua, like you said, led the league in passing, but against really good football teams, they're just not good enough. And that comes down to number one.
Well, yeah. So, you know.
He'll get
his extension.
Think about it.
He's going to get over $50 million a year.
Yeah, there's no way. You can't pay him that.
He led the league in passing.
Because you're going to get worse, not better. That's why. You're going to have $50 million tied up in a guy who's not helping you win enough.
I don't think they believe.
Look at the Bills. Look at the Buffalo Bills compared to the Miami Dolphins. When things go bad, the guy taking snaps puts the cape on and does it.
Yeah.
Tyreek can't put the cape on if he doesn't have the ball. Or if you got double team, you got somebody over the top of him. Tyreek can't do it without the ball. Tua can't do it even with the ball. You can't give him $50 million because you're going to get worse over time, not better.
I don't disagree with you in any way, shape, or form, but I am convinced that the Dolphins see it differently. They see a guy who led the league in passing, and they say, look, we've made progress. We'll get there. We've made the playoffs each of the last 2 years. We'll take it step by step. I think they will put themselves in a precarious cap situation because this contract – coupled with whatever you have to do to hold on to Waddle, if you want to hold on to Jalen Phillips because he comes back successfully from Achilles surgery, what have you, fine, you know? But
no.
It's going to be tricky because the Bradley Chubb contract gets expensive.
You've got ticket sales to think about. You've got a public.
What's your alternative?
That's right.
You don't have a better alternative right now. You got to pay him. And you got to pay fair market value for a guy who led the league in passing. I don't see how they – there's no way around it for them.
I put it.
They're kind of backed into a corner.
You'd have to franchise him.
You could
do
that, but I think he and his agent revolt.
Well, they can do that.
You want to know why? Because some other team will pay him.
Well, okay, that's fine. That's fine. In fact, I hope it's the Jets or the Patriots. Right?
Are the Dolphins better without Tua?
This year, no. In the future, probably.
I don't know if you can guarantee that.
Well, yeah. Who? I go on and on about that. Here's the thing. They're the sixth seed in the playoffs last year at 11-6. Sixth seed.
Yep.
There were four teams in the conference that were 11-6. They were behind three of them, the other three. Then there was a 10-7 Houston team.
Yeah, because they probably lost games to all of them.
And Baltimore.
I mean, what did they have? One win against a team with a winning record last year?
That's right.
And that's the problem. But I don't think the Dolphins see it that way. I think they see it as glass half full, not half empty. So it's pretty crazy. Topic of discussion for you today is draft-related and Bills-related, of course. What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? You heard Brandon Bean say it back in January. We got a hit on this draft class. What is the minimum they need to pull out of this draft class? Whether you think it's a player perspective, a position perspective, or a production perspective. Whatever it is, you let us know. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number to join us, open lines for you there, And we've got nothing but your phone calls the rest of the way. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we heard Brandon Bean say it back in January in his season wrap-up press conference. He said, in no uncertain terms, we really have to hit on this draft. So with that in mind, we are asking you today, what is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? What do you believe that must be? And you could take this from any perspective you wish. This could be from a production perspective, could be from a position perspective, could be from a specific player perspective. Maybe you're thinking they need a minimum number of starters as rookies out of this draft class. Maybe you're thinking you need a minimum number of contributors in terms of something on defense in the back end, something at the defensive line. Whatever you think it might be, you let us know. 803-0550. 1-888-550-2550, the numbers to get on board. We got open lines for you. If you don't have time to give us a phone call, you can always hit us up on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive, because I think this could cover a wide range of what people believe the Bills have to come out of this draft class with at a minimum. So
could be solid starting wide receiver, could be couple of starters at various positions, could be a safety, could be a defensive tackle, could be a pass rusher and wide receiver.
I'll tell you what it is for me.
Certainly there's a bunch of things you could. And if you go back to their 2018 draft, they got like five really good players. Obviously, you know, Wyatt Teller ended up getting traded because they had a spot where they had some depth at that moment.
Yeah.
But all those guys, and then Ray McLeod's still banging around the league. So even he was a sixth round pick. So that would be nice.
That would be nice. I'll tell you what I would – my answer to this question would be two wide receivers. I think they got to come out of this draft with a minimum of two wide receivers. Now, that doesn't mean they don't need some other things too, but if I had to put a prerequisite on it, that's what it would be for me. Let's get two guys at the receiver position coming out of this thing.
I thought it was one – if they picked the receiver at 28, I thought it would be one. If they didn't take one with their first pick at 28 or trade up to get one earlier than that, I thought you had to come out at least with two. Now, that was before Steph Diggs got traded. So you can imagine where I'm at now. I'm kind of with you. You got to come out with two, and you better pick one at 28. And if you don't pick it at 28, you better pick it before 60. So I think you got to go high and get some traits in this draft. So we'll see. I'm with you, Brownie. I think wide receiver is of the utmost importance, and I think you got to get him high in this draft. And if you don't get him at the top, you got to get a bunch of them.
We should mention that a friend of the show, Dane Brugler, who just came out with his draft guide, The Beast, on theathletic.com, and we had him on the show earlier this week. He came out with a 7-round mock draft. And he had the Bills trading up to pick 17, Jacksonville, which is an area we noted in recent weeks as a possible landing spot if the Bills feel they needed to trade up. And he had them taking Brian Thomas Jr. with the 17th overall pick. I saw another mock draft, and the name and the credit escapes me, so forgive me for that. But they had the Bills trading up from 28 to 22 with the Philadelphia Eagles and taking Brian Thomas Jr. So it's interesting that the range for Brian Thomas Jr. has been vacillating somewhat. For a while, it was like 11 to 18. Now it's more like 15 to 23. So it seems like there's been a little bit of a shift there. And whether that's because some of these draft gurus have gained more intel on what teams think of the player, or, you know, maybe they're hearing things. If there is somewhat of a shift and it's somewhat down the board, that would help Buffalo if they, in fact, are interested in this guy. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be. So I found that interesting. Some of the more recent mocks have the Bills making a move, but they also have Brian Thomas lower in round one than we've seen, you know, a month ago, for example.
Right. you're seeing Malik Nabers move, I think, up and down the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is far and away the consensus
kind of locked in as a top five.
So whichever receiver goes first, it will be Marvin Harrison Jr. Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze are virtually just – you can flip them back and forth as to who likes who and who thinks – you know, who thinks who's better. And then Brian Thomas Jr., A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey come somewhere down. Now, Brian Thomas Jr. seems to be in a very thin slice of number two.
Yeah, he's like the second tier three. All by himself.
He's the second tier by himself. Hard to understand how that gets cut up that to those levels, but there you have it. Who knows? And here's the thing. We can all be right about what we think about these wide receivers, and we don't – because obviously we don't matter. The teams have their own opinions, and they're gonna act on those, and we're gonna see the results of those opinions when it comes to the draft. Like, but I'm with you, Brownie. I think that's as high as it goes. I'm thinking, and I said it yesterday. I think the Bills move up 4 or 5 spots, not 10,
yeah,
or 11. I think it's 4 or 5, forward or back. I think they're gonna either pick at 28 or they're gonna be pick in that range, late second, late first, early second.
What,
and I think more likely, yeah, they'll trade up.
What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class for the 2024 season? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The numbers to get on board. Got open lines for you, but we're gonna crack open the tweet sheet in the meantime. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Seth leads off and says, 2 wide receivers early, maybe first, and then trade into the third for another there. Defensive tackle, defensive end in the second, and then depth guys at safety, O-line, running back, and linebacker. Hoping to see about 3 to 4 of the late-round picks used for trade-ups. That's a lot of things for the minimum, but a lot has to happen in this draft.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think that's what Brandon Bean was getting at when he said it back in January. He and his personnel department, they knew some of the salary cap casualties that were on the horizon based on where their cap stood. So he knew there was going to be a bit of a gutting of the roster with salaries moving off, free agents moving out, and you're going to have to replace a lot of that with youth.
They could see it coming. They knew. Yeah. I mean, they're the ones who set this whole thing up, so they could see it coming during the season and probably before the regular season even started, what was coming down the pipe. And then they probably started having hard conversations about Mitch Morse, about Micah, about Jordan, you know, and certainly when Tre'Davious got hurt, about Tre'Davious. All of that stuff. Milano. I mean, there's nothing – as Brandon Bean will tell you, nothing can be sacred, you know. Nothing can be sacred. You got to have these hard conversations, even ridiculous conversations. So they could see all of this coming, but they knew this team going to look way different when it lines up in 2024 than it did in 2023. Way different. So they had to prepare for it. They had to prepare for it, and this draft is, I roll your eyes and say, it's crucial for their success this coming year.
Yeah. Jack on the tweet sheet says, 2 wide receivers, 1 on day 1. I refuse to accept a Chop Maben or some offensive lineman. Allen needs weapons. If it were me, I'd take a wide receiver in round 2 also, but understanding other needs at safety, defensive line, guard slash center, corner, running back, I do think they need to get another wide receiver on day 3. Check out Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint. Yeah, Rosemy Jack Saint, nice player. I think he's towards the back of the draft, to be honest with you. Did a decent job at Georgia, ran a lot of their over routes, middle of the field guy, good size, decent hands, not great hands, a little bit of a body catcher. So I think the general consensus on him is late day 3.
Right.
So if you want to use one of your 6s or 7 or your 7th, he might still be there.
And there could be some surprise moves and surprise trades. I've thrown it out there a couple of times in the last week or two that it could be a player for a pick, particularly given the Bills' success in recent times where they've got some guys that other teams really covet. I think one of the things we're stuck in this draft cycle that maybe I can distill it a little, there's 2 things working on the Bills' draft this year. 1, the defensive side of the ball, you can almost like, hey, take your pick, draft a guy. maybe not a linebacker because you've got Bernard and Milano, although Milano, you know, Milano has his own question marks, but Dorian Williams flashed. So, you know, but other than that, take your pick. Corner, safety, defensive line, edge, defensive tackle. You can take your pick over there. On offense, there's one.
Yeah, I mean, they might draft some O-line depth or a late running back.
And it's an arms race.
Yeah.
So that's where we're stuck. We may be stuck there. I don't know that Brandon Bean is, but that's what we're all thinking, right?
Well, yeah, and as you said earlier, in the wake of the Diggs trade, I think it's only become more pronounced.
Right. Right.
So that's the difficult thing for fans to get around. They were thinking receiver before the Diggs move. Now in the wake of it, it's almost an absolute, you know? So I think it makes it even more pronounced in terms of what the Bills have to do. Got to take a break here, but still taking your phone calls at 803-0550. What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? You let us know when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. And going to get right to the phones here for some people waiting patiently, where we have been asking you today, what is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? Let us know at 803-0550. We lead off with Tim in Charlotte. What do you got for us, Tim?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that I think that at minimum, the Bills need to come out of this draft class with two defensive ends. I'm not saying that it has to happen early by any means, but I do like the idea of Chop Robinson, if he drops, you know, gets there to 25, 26, whatever the case may be. But I've been driving the wide receiver train just like everybody else. I really think that they need two of them, but I also think that a low-key need for the Bills is defensive end. I really think they need two of those as well. I could see a scenario where potentially Von Miller is not on this roster for next season, and then you only have A.J. and Greg on a fifth-year option. A.J. only would have 1 year left on his deal at that point. I just think the depth and the long-term plan at that position hasn't been figured out yet, and I think that they could address it in this draft.
All right. Not a bad point, Tim. And we've heard Brandon Bean say over the years, you can never have enough pass rushers. I've heard those words come out of his mouth a number of times.
I'll say this too. Chop Robinson aside, I mean, you'll get a lot of people that are pretty violently against Chop Robinson because of the Aaron Maben incident from the same school, same position, all that stuff. Whether you like the prospect or not, the Bills aren't going to take a prospect they don't like. So if whoever it is, I think it's the idea of a defensive end that we can talk about without getting into a specific guy. And I'm with you. We're far enough down this road that the Bills have always been – they've always had a plan, and they've always executed it pretty well. They do a lot of things really well all the way around, from the building all the way to the field, from the top of the organization all the way down to Brownie and I. So – they do a lot of things well. So I do have this kind of level of faith in Brandon Bean. I don't have a problem who he takes, but I want to hear what you say, and I get it. I'm kind of with you. There's like three guys. Usually they go into a game with eight, and we have like
dressed.
We're like four. So they need some guys, and we have no idea who those guys are going
to
be.
Yeah. Just to remind everybody, they did sign Casey Toohill in free agency from Washington. I would say if you need a description of him, I would call him a rich man's Trent Murphy, who was a free agent signing of the Bills earlier in the McDermott Bean era. I think he's a more athletic version of Trent Murphy, who was a solid player for them. Not a dynamic 10-sack-a-year guy, but a steady, solid player. And, you know, Steve and I are still pretty high on the prospects for Kingsley Jonathan. But, yeah, I think an edge rusher could firmly be in the mix for this draft class, no question about it. To Gary in Cheektowaga, what's up, Gary?
Yeah, you know, I think we should really help Josh Allen in this draft. You know, you say defensive ends and pass rushers, but the good teams, they have quarterbacks that get rid of the ball quick, and you can't sack them anyway. So I say let's get this center – from Oregon, and a couple pass rushers, or a couple receivers, rather, and a running back, and let's concentrate on the offense and make sure your defense can, you know, stop the run. And don't worry about the pass rushers, or don't concentrate on that so much, because they're good against the lesser teams. But the top teams, you know, like Cincinnati and Kansas City and Miami, they you very rarely get a chance to sack them, because they get rid of the quarterbacks, get rid of the ball too quickly. So that's the way I feel. I mean, I think, you know, they can come up with a decent above average defense, but you got to help out Josh Allen. I mean, that's the main priority of the draft, I think.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate
I'll say
the
this,
call.
Gary. One of the reasons you see teams getting rid of the ball fast is for instance, like the Miami Dolphins, and Tua led the league in passing, and Brownie's always saying that, and it's true. They get rid of the ball fast with Tua because he doesn't have the arm to get it down there. He's got to put a lot of air under it and heave it to get it down the field any length of throw. Teams build their offense and their schemes around what their players do well. Tua's ultra accurate, and he can get rid of the ball and see it really quickly. And they use that in Miami to a certain extent, where it almost renders some of what Tyreek Hill does is irrelevant, because they got to do this for Tua. That's the way teams are. If they get rid of it fast, one reason is because A, they don't have a very good offensive line, or B, their quarterback's got an arm that needs to get rid of it quick, and he's got the ability to do that and see it and read it. So don't think that the trend in the league is to have everybody get rid of the ball fast. You do what your team does best. The Bills have got a really good offensive line, and they got a quarterback with a big arm. So they can do things other teams don't. They can build their offense around schemes that other teams don't want to build their offense around. So don't get caught up that the trend in the league is this or that. The trend in the league is to get your guys to do what they do best and give them the weapons to do it. Now, when you're talking about Josh, yeah, the more the merrier. Give him the most guys that can get open in the most in the least amount of time and make them fast, put a lot of pressure on the defense. I get all of that. But stopping the run is a kind of a given in the NFL. Sooner or later, they're going to figure out a way to stop the run. And even in the Bills' worst outing in the last couple of years, where they lost that hurricane game to the Patriots, they lost that because of the wind in the stadium and their inability to score points in it rather than stop the Patriots' run game. So you got to have my point is you got to have a pass rush, bro. You can't just leave it to the chance that you're going to be able to have guys stand up and bat balls down. No, you got to get after the passer. The ball has to come out. And for all those teams that get rid of it fast, that's because that their offensive line can't hold up. And that's why your pass rush has to overcome that. So I get it, and I understand your logic, but I'm not quite there with you.
Let's go to Jim in Webster next. What do you got for us, Jim?
So if the Bills hadn't gotten Curtis Samuel, I'd agree with you guys on two wide receivers, but I really think we just need one bona fide starter to replace Gabe Davis and, you know, a bigger guy. But the second would be the defensive line edge rusher. So whichever, you know, in the draft, the first round, if an edge rusher drops to them and it's a bona fide stud, then go that route. And if, you know, if a wide receiver that's a stud, like, you know, that drops down Adonis Mitchell or somebody, then go that route. But whichever the better one is.
Yeah, I mean, you could slice it any way you want, Jim. I get what you're saying. I don't think edge rusher should be dismissed. I would almost argue it's a more important position than defensive tackle right now, because, you know, they have fortified their ranks at both spots, Austin Johnson and Deshaun Williams, to play on the defensive interior as backups to Daquan Jones and Ed Oliver. That's not to say they wouldn't draft a defensive tackle as well, but, you know, you're talking about minimums. I would think you got to come out of this draft with one edge rusher, maybe one defensive tackle too. I mean, you got 10 picks. I'm not saying you're going to end up with 10, but if you finish with 8, Still think you have to come up with an edge rusher, a defensive tackle, and I'm still pounding the table for two wide receivers. And then if you want to get a corner and a safety or a linebacker, I'll listen to that.
But, yeah, I would agree. I think you can if the Bills have all 10 of these picks and they end up taking all of them, you're going to – I think three of them – I think there's no question three of them are going to be wide receiver if they don't take a wide receiver at 28. If they take a wide receiver at 28, it may be only one later on. But if they don't take him at 28, if everything's gone off the board and nothing falls their way, they're taking three. And you can take your pick as to who else the other picks are. But if you get to 28, you're right. And this is what we don't know. If there's a bona fide stud on the board, you're taking him. I don't care if he's, you know, if he's a punter. You're going to take a stud, a guy who's going to – I'm obviously being facetious. They're not going to take a punter at 28.
Being hyperbolic to make there a point.
That word. But if there's a difference maker at edge rusher, wide receiver, or safety, or corner, they're going to take that guy. They're going to take that guy, and they should.
We have to take a break here, but we're wide open for phone calls when we return. So Mike in Rochester, Denny in Millbury, Mike in East Aurora, hang tight. You guys will lead us off when we return. What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? You tell us at 803-0550 when we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome in to hour number two here on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is your program of choice. Thanks for doing that. Going to get back to the phones where we are asking you today, what is the minimum needed from the Bills 2024 draft class? Could be from whatever perspective you choose, production, specific player, specific position. You let us know at 803-0550 where we have open lines for you. In the meantime, though, we lead off with Mike in Rochester. What's up, Mike?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I completely agree that we got to keep getting weapons for Josh. And I know we say we want to leave the draft with two receivers, but my question was, do you guys think there's any veteran out there that we could maybe on a one-year prove-it deal? Because Curtis Samuel's 27, and then we got Shakir, we got Shorter, and we got some young guys, but I think someone like, I don't know, I was looking at the list, we got a Michael Thomas or DJ Chark or Corey Davis, someone that's has a little more veteran presence, a little older, that may help, in addition to, yes, I still think we need the lights out X receiver in the first round. If there's someone that Bean can go get, if we go get one of the top three or a Thomas, and I think those two pieces would be good because there are other needs, DN, D-line, stuff like that.
Yeah, I get it. I don't think you would rule it out. A perfect example, Mike, would be if the Bills only come out of the draft with one receiver. And I think then that enhances the likelihood that Brandon Bean, you know, sniffs around in May and June to try to find a receiver still out there in the market and maybe signs them to a cap-friendly one-year deal where, for the most part, the market's dried up for free agents and a veteran that's still drifting in the abyss out there would be happy to take it.
Well, yeah, that's what you're talking about. You go down that list of, you know, the Michael Thomases and the, you know.
Corey Davis isn't an option. He actually retired from football at age 28. So
you got either Hunter Renfro's, Allen Robinson's, and OBJ's out there. I mean, you've got some guys out there. And what Brandon might be, and no doubt what he's doing, is kind of hanging out. He's in no hurry. He's got the draft to look at. They're going to get some fresh legs on the roster from this draft. And guys like, you know, Michael Thomas, he's out there out of work. Now,
Injury issue, but yes.
He's coming off an injury. So Michael Thomas will come in and they'll say, listen, we'll give you a look, but you got to work out for us. And then they'll give him an offer. And you may get a guy like Michael Thomas for a one-year deal on a relatively affordable contract because he wants to get back in the league and prove he can still play. Now, he's 31, but nevertheless.
He's not going to have a major role in your offense. So.
He doesn't need to have. Yeah. In this, you know. But if he comes in and can be a sliver of what he was at one point, dude, you got a guy. So there's guys like that out there. You know, and you're like we've been talking about, Tyler Boyd's out there, DJ Chark, I'm sorry. You can go down the list, Randall Cobb, Jakeem Grant, Mecole Hardman. I mean, people are going to look at him. They're going to give him a look because he's 26, you know. Some of that goes on. There's a ton of guys out there who were in the league a year ago or recently out of the league. But to come in, to have those guys come in, you've got to go down to the guys who are fresh out, like the OBJs, Allen Robinsons, Michael Thomas's, like we said. Those guys are in their early 30s and have a chance to, you know, maybe give you a little something or whatever they have left. But that's what, you know, that's all you're going to get. Maybe they come in and they're, you know, they got a spring in their step. I don't know. But I think there's that whole list is going to be available later on, maybe right up till training camp, and they'll say, okay, finally they got to take what is out there.
Yeah. What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got open lines for you, so be sure to chime in if you have a minute or two. We go to Denny in Millbury next. What do you got for us, Denny?
Hey, thanks for accepting my call. So I am in a weird camp. I am in the trade down camp. I want to start with a little statistic. At 28, the last player to make the Pro Bowl was Mark Ingram in 2011. So staying at 28 is useless. Calvin Benjamin, by the way, was in 2014 at 28. So my thing is, we need to use these draft picks. So I want us to trade down, utilize some of those later draft picks to sweeten the pot, and really like take advantage of the first, second, and third. Our second day is looking pretty bad because of the fact that we're not having that third round draft pick. So I think it would be really good for us to trade down, get some extra picks. When it comes to the players I want a speedster at wide receiver. I want to be able to blow the top off the defense, which is going to open up stuff for Coach Kincaid, even Shakir. And speaking of blowing off the top of the defense, safety is a huge issue. We haven't thought about that in like a decade since we signed Hyde and Poyer. But if people start, you know, doing something along those lines, it's going to change all of the things the defense needs. So I really want us to lock down safety and get one wide receiver and just make sure we get the most draft picks earlier than we can. So, you know, trade out of the first, but try to keep trading up into the second day if we can as well. And ensure these picks are this year, not 2025 picks, you know?
Yeah, I got you. All right, a lot in there, Denny. Thanks for the call.
Don't get caught up in the – like nobody ever goes to the Pro Bowl from pick 28.
Yeah.
Because you got like 10 guys every year that go to the Pro Bowl who were drafted after number 28. So, you know, don't let that alter your opinion. But yeah, I'm with you. I like casting a wide net because particularly for the fact that the Bills have gotten quality above, not even quality, great players in the middle rounds of the draft, 4, 5, and 6s and 7s. They've got some great players from those spots in the draft. So the more you have, the more likely it is you get another one. So I'm kind of with you on that, but you're going to be passing up some really good prospects if you skip the first round and trade out of it.
I think they do move around the board a little bit, but I think they're in an you mentioned in an effort to get a third round pick. I think they move up, not back, because with the draft capital they have in round 4, I think they use that to get up into the bottom of round three. You know, what do they have? 3 fours now? No, 2 fours, 3 fives. That's what they have. They have 3 fives and 2 fours. So I think they package some of those to try to get into the bottom of day two in round three. Mm-hmm. We know how ticked Brandon Bean was that they were awarded a compensatory fourth, not a third, as all indications were up until the 11th hour that they were going to get. And then that fell by the wayside. They tried to appeal it, didn't get it overturned, and here they are, no third-round pick. So I would anticipate they're going to package some of those early day three picks and parlay that into a late three to try to, you know, get in the top 100 with a third choice.
Yeah, they've got 5 picks between 128 and 163. They got 128 and 163 and 3 between them.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be the meat of this draft. If and when if they move, it's going to be because they have assets in that spot. I'm talking about moving up in the top of the draft. Some of those spots are going to get used up because they're the ones that are valuable. Now you can talk about next year they got 2 twos, which so next year maybe one of those goes away with this draft, but I'm with you. Cast a wide net, get a bunch, and trust your process of picking the better players than other teams are able to pick at that. Because I don't think I don't know other teams like I know the Bills, obviously, but I don't know how you can't be happy with the way the Bills draft in the middle of the rounds.
Let's go to Mike in a car next. What's up, Mike?
Hey guys, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of. The Bills need to decide if the guy that they're going to get at 28 or if they trade back is going to be a number one wide receiver in this league because they need a number one. I mean, Shakir and Samuel are great and Kincaid, but they need a number one, and they need a guy that they perceive is going to be a number one because if the guy they get at 28 or 33 or whatever the number is, they don't think will ever really be a number one, will be nothing more than a good number two, then you need to trade up. And either, you know, if they think Leggett is going to be the guy at 28 and they can get him and they're convinced that he's a number one guy, then you stay. But if they don't think that Leggett or Brian Thomas or whoever else they're going to get at 28 is going to be more than a number two, then this is your opportunity. And you've got a wide open spot for the number one. You got to... 5 years that he can grow. I trade up and I try to get one of the big three.
I'll say this. I'm not there. I just saw for 2 years in a row a team win the Super Bowl without a number one. In fact, they traded a number one and then went to 2 Super Bowls and won them.
And you didn't take a receiver until round two last year.
I know that this sounds like a lot of it falls on Josh. I get that, but that's the way the world turns. This offense, whether they draft 0 wide receivers or 10 wide receivers in this draft, this offense falls on Josh, and they're going to be good with or without. They're going to be good either way. 10 receivers in this draft or 0 receivers. They're going to be good, really good. They're going to be hard to beat again. Nobody beats nobody in 3 years. Nobody has beaten this team by more than one possession in the regular season. Nobody. So they're going to be there again. And if you're going to spend assets, spend them on the whole roster and know that the strength of your roster is the guy taking snaps and those guys you've already got there. The 5 guys in front of him, the tight end, the running back, and a couple of wide receivers in Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, who are pretty good in their own right. Let's go. Because we've seen teams win the Super Bowl with less. So, I'm not there. I mean, I'm all for it.
Right.
I'm not saying don't do it, but I'm not saying that you got your hands, you know, I'm not chaining myself to the desk.
We've had multiple draft gurus come on our show here and confirm. I mean, from Daniel Jeremiah to Jim Nagy at the Senior Bowl to Dane Brugler this week, tell us that the depth in this receiver class goes 3 rounds and you can get somebody that can contribute in their rookie season as late as round 3. So to trade up for one of the top 3 would be great, But all is not lost if you don't do that. And I think if you pick one at 28, you're probably getting a future number one wide receiver because it's that deep this year. They're already talking about how they might set a record for most receivers ever taken in round one. The record is 7. We got people mocking that they'll be 8. Yeah, I mean, I don't think all is lost if you don't go up and get one of the top 3 guys.
Right. Certainly, let's face it, those guys have reason to believe one of those 3 guys, maybe all 3 of those guys are difference makers. No question about it. But that no more so than you ever have in any other draft. So, and believe me, if Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. or Rome Odunze go to the Minnesota Vikings or the New York Jets or pick your school, pick your team or your logo, there's no guarantee they're going to be able to help that team or pull them out of the depths. You know, they're not going to – I mean, if Marvin Harrison Jr. gets taken by the Arizona Cardinals, it's going to be hard for him, even with Kyler Murray at quarterback, to have the kind of career that any other great receiver has had. You know, even Larry Fitzgerald there in Arizona.
Well, he had a Hall of Fame career. Did get to play with Kurt Warner.
For what, 2 years? Yeah. 3 years?
And Carson Palmer.
So the receivers are great. I mean, and they may make a difference, but I'm telling you what, the guy that's important is the guy taking snaps. It's been proven year after year after year. Look back at the great, like even Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. That guy was special. And Antonio Brown found out he was special. Juju Smith-Schuster found out he was special. Hines Ward found out, knew he was special. He elevated a ton of guys who went other places and could not get it done. It's the guy. That's why you can't find them. They're just, you know, they just turn up sometimes. So I'm leaning out the window, blowing the horn on the wide receiver train, but I'm smart enough to know one way or the other, this team's going to be good anyway, even if he's not 28th pick or the 17th pick if they trade up.
Let's get back to the phones and to Pablo in Rochester. What's up, Pablo?
Hey, guys. I watch you every day. It's nice to finally get on the phone with you.
Glad you did it.
Looking at more generally building a roster, I would love to see every one of these picks at least be worthy of the practice squad. And of that, I think 4 to 6 of them probably need to make the 53. The Bills only really need a couple starters out of this draft, but they need guys who can start maybe by next year.
Yeah, I think that's a more realistic way to look at it, Pablo. I mean, you're right. Get 4, 5 guys on the roster on game day from the rookie class. Yeah, that's pretty good. And then have them be ascending and maybe have all 10 guys hang around the building for the all year on the practice squad or injured reserve, what have you. I think that's a realistic way to look at it, no question about it. It's hard to get on an NFL roster and to hang around the building to give yourself a chance to develop and then hone your skills and use the traits that you're drafted with and get polished enough to say, oh, yeah, now he can play.
Yeah,
I think that's really realistic.
Think about James Cook. Second round pick 2 years ago, back up to Singletary his rookie year, and then second year, bang, starter, top 5 in total yards from scrimmage last year. So, yeah, you keep doing that, your team's going to be pretty healthy in terms of talent and playmaking ability, especially on the offensive side of the ball. To Roxanne in Kenmore. What's up, Roxanne?
Oh, hi. Nice to speak with you. Love you both. I am not understanding why the guys that are on the practice squad that have only been brought on the team within the last couple of years, why are they not considered a little bit more heavily in the decision to move up onto the first squad?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question, Roxanne, and thanks for calling. So I'll just say this. Basically, your practice squad is additional depth for your roster in the event of rash of injury. It is also a haven to develop players that you believe, if they're not quite ready to be a player worthy of a roster spot on your 53-man roster, you believe with good coaching and development and their want to and desire to be better can get to that level and contribute to your football team. Now, all that being said, this is a very hard team to make. It's a very hard 53-man roster to make because it has been so flush with talent. I would say if there was ever a year in the Bean McDermott era, since maybe 2018, 2019, for a practice squad player to prove they deserve a spot on the 53, it's this year. Yeah. Because we've seen more off-season turnover with veterans moving out the door, salary cap casualties of proven veteran players no longer here. I think there are going to be more openings for late draft choices and for practice squad guys to make the 53 this year for the Bills. It's just been a tough roster to crack.
But that doesn't mean they don't like these guys.
Yeah.
Tyrell Shavers, Justin Shorter, those are guys that are going to be right back in the mix this year. And it's going to be a different year for them because last year they come in, they're trying to make it, and it's a big transition to go from a college player, particularly where those guys were playing and get up in the NFL where you got to find your own place to live. You got to make your own way. You got to, you know, set up your own household. And then, you know, fumble and stumble your way through a regular season where you're on IR. What are you allowed to do? Where are you allowed to go? What are you allowed to, how are you allowed to be in the building? And then you come back and you watch these guys get drafted and it's be like, you've seen it. They're going to be much more ready to attack training camp this year as a pro football player than they were a year ago. And you can imagine they're going to be in a much better headspace. Those guys tend to be forgotten by fans like Brownie and I and the regular people because we don't think about them and we think, well, they're not good enough. Well, like Brownie said, an NFL roster is really tough to make.
Yeah.
All of them are, let alone one that's winning a playoff game every year. Right? So it's hard to get on the field, but they do have the physical traits that you need to learn how to do it. We'll see how much they've learned from that last year, this year as training camp kicks off. And that's basically, they're here because there's somebody in the staff, probably a lot of guys on the coaching staff, who think, you know what, he's got a chance to really help us. I like that guy. Let's keep him around. And there's probably more than one guy saying that about him. So take heart in that they've got some guys on this roster they're given a chance to, again, who they've got hope for. That Shavers and Shorter are two guys that, to me, are very intriguing for this coming year. And we'll see if they can make the most of it.
Tremendous size, both of them.
Both of them.
803-0550.
If they drafted anybody in this draft who looked like Tyrell Shavers and Justin Shorter, everybody should be excited about it. And there's room at the top of the roster now at the wide receiver room. Let's see him.
Yeah. Everybody, you know, moves up a peg.
Two pegs. Gabe and Steph are both gone.
Right. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. What is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class for the upcoming 2024 campaign? You can let us know what that is. We'll check in on the tweet sheet. We're also going to have a discussion when we come back on the best receiver class in recent memory. Some people believe it was the 2014 draft class. I would respectfully disagree. I'll make my submission when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. We'll just run through some of these. Somebody wrote the 2014 draft classes. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on a Wednesday, and with all of the hype about what a great wide receiver draft this is expected to be here in 2024. They're saying one of the best in recent memory. Someone put a piece together online and basically said, it's the 2014 draft class that's the best receiver class ever, and don't say anything different. It's not even up for debate. And I would argue, well, you might not be very old then.
Yeah, right.
Because you clearly don't remember some classes of the past. So I'll run down the 2014 draft class, which Bills fans should remember well because that was the draft that the Bills traded up to 4 to take the first receiver off the board that year, Sammy Watkins. at pick four. Mike Evans, who has had a 1,000-yard season every season he's been in the league. I think it's 10 or 11 now. OBJ at 12. Brandon Cooks at 20. Kelvin Benjamin at 28. Pretty darn good round one. Round two, Marquise Lee. Ugh. Jordan Matthews. Mm. Paul Richardson. Come again. Davante Adams. Good. Cody Latimer. Allen Robinson. Decent career. Jarvis Landry. And then I'll just give you a few in round three. Josh Huff, Dante Moncrief, John Brown, Dree Archer. So that's your 2014 class. Now, some have said the 2020 class was pretty good. Okay? I'll run that down real quick.
All right.
Henry Ruggs, unfortunate. Jerry Jeudy on his second team. CeeDee Lamb, top three receiver in the league. Jalen Reagor, bounced around a little bit. Justin Jefferson, Brandon Ayuk, second round, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, K.J. Hamler, Chase Claypool, Van Jefferson, Denzel Mims, Lynn Bowden, Brian Edwards, Devin Duvernay. What do you think of those two in comparison to one another? I've got a receiver class that's even better.
Than those?
Yes. Which one do you think is better of those two? It's probably 2014, right?
I would say yes. Because
it goes a little deeper.
You're more complete.
Yes.
Yes, I would say
but we're 4 years in. I mean, right. You know what exactly. T. Higgins is. You know what Justin Jefferson is. You know what Michael Pittman is. You also know what Chase Claypool is.
That's right.
Denzel Mims.
You forget the hype that Mims and Claypool came out with, just like the rest of those guys. I mean, just like some of these guys this year. So the ones that you know the more complete career of are the ones that are.
I still maintain that the gold standard for wide receiver class is 1996. I will run down the list for you. Keyshawn Johnson.
Yeah.
Terry Glenn. Eddie Kennison.
Yeah. Okay.
Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, okay.
Eric Molds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Round two, Alex Van Dyke. Just dismiss it. It was a Jets pick. Amani Toomer.
Okay.
Brian Still. Don't know who that is. Mohsin Muhammad.
Oh, yes. Very good player.
Bobby Engram. Long career. Derek Mays. Round three, Terrell Owens. Stepford Williams. And in round five, Joe Horn.
Oh, yeah.
That's 1996.
That's
the gold
right
standard.
There, yeah, and I'll say this too. You got Terrell Owens in the third round as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
and the rest of those
Marvin Harrison Hall
of Famer, Eric Molds Hall of Fame caliber player who was on the wrong team at the wrong time.
But I mean, Amani Toomer, number one
Amani
receiver.
Amani Toomer,
Mohsin Muhammad,
Mohsin Muhammad,
number
also,
one receiver,
was also a Hall of Fame. Nominee kind of guy, one of those guys that
injuries kind of got him at the end.
That's right. That's a big class right there. Yeah.
To me, and that's still the gold standard.
Yeah, you can old guys like us can always pull out better guys than the young guys can because they what do you say? 2014 was
2014.
Oh, come on,
which man. I mean, there's some names there.
2014,
but Davante Adams in round two, nice. Allen Robinson, Jarvis Landry, okay careers,
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it's not 1996. So hopefully we've convinced you otherwise. Let's get back to the phones at 803-0550 where we're asking you, what is the minimum needed from this Bills draft class? We go to Steve in Syracuse next. What's up, Steve?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm regarding the wide receivers. I think in the first round, if we stay pat, we got to get McConkey. I think he's intelligent, great route runner, great hands, and he's got 4.39 speed. He will fill in real nicely. And then, as far as the second pick, I think they seem to get another wide receiver somewhere in the draft, but be toward the top also, Worthy. Now, they might not be too keen on Worthy, but I'll tell you this. We got to realize there's no kickoff system now. And to put him back there, kick and return kicks, besides being a receiver, I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of defenses that are very nervous about that.
You're talking about Xavier Worthy?
Yeah, Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, well, he's a good man for that.
Xavier Worthy will be long gone by the time you get to pick 60 for the Bills.
Yeah, I don't
All right, so we get another receiver anywhere somewhere.
Okay. All right.
But then if we come out of the draft with six players, even just six players, we're going to be very good. You're going to have two wide receivers, the linebacker, safety, defensive end, defensive tackle, and running back. And that'd be a successful draft right there.
Well, yeah, that's true. You're right. If we got a starting caliber player at all those spots, you would absolutely
that might be a little
it'd
ambitious.
Be a grand slam home run, and you could circle the bases twice after that one.
Steve using a baseball reference. I didn't expect that.
Yes, including doing something stupid like circling the bases twice. Yes. Six out of 10 guys that can make the roster and contribute would be unprecedented, almost. Mm. It's probably happened at some point, but on a roster as like the Bills, that would be unbelievable. So that it's a little bit of a pipe dream, like we always kind of do in this. We always kind of overshoot. Like, you know, Xavier Worthy and Ladd McConkey are not going to the same team in this draft.
Yeah, probably not. And look, I wouldn't be unhappy if they took McConkey. I wouldn't, because
right,
I think he can be a producer in any offense, quite frankly.
I think he's closer to being pro-ready than a lot of these other guys, or at least confidently pro-ready. There's certainly guys that are going to be ready to step on the field, particularly those top three or four guys. But McConkey is a guy who is going to carve out a niche in the league and play for, you know, he's going to put together a nice decade of a career, I think, because of his ability to get open. His football IQ seems to jump out at you, and he runs routes, catches the ball. I mean, that's a wide receiver.
I see Wes Welker when I watch him play.
He's way bigger than Wes.
He's 5'11", yeah.
And,
so.
You know, he's 4.39 speed. Wes Welker never ran that. But, yeah, that's the kind of guy. He's a slot receiver, so he's a niche guy. He's not going to be a big-time outside receiver like a Terrell Owens or a Calvin Johnson, some one of those jokers, or a Ja'Marr Chase. But he's going to be a very good guy. I think the problem with Ladd is I think they just found out they got a guy like that on the roster already in Khalil Shakir. Shakir really played well for them down the stretch last year, and I think they trust him, and I know Josh does. The touchdown he caught in that Chiefs game was spectacular at the pylon.
And don't forget the one he got against Pittsburgh.
And the
shake and bake.
Yeah, the one where he gave the stick move in between the hash mark. That was elite.
Put Michael Walker on his rear end.
So they've got kind of Ladd McConkey already here.
Yeah. That's the only thing that stands in the way of me saying, yeah, take him. I think they need someone that can line up outside full time, polished route runner, you know, and can stretch the field, be explosive. Because that's all we've heard from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. All offseason, we heard it from them at the combine, talking about explosive plays and how they need to take the top off of defense again, because a lot of what we saw in the Bills passing game last year was at or near the line of scrimmage, or at best in the intermediate areas. Now, part of that is the way defenses are playing them, but it's also because they didn't have anybody to threaten defenses and stretch the field. So you need a more explosive player that can deliver, if not explosive plays at the catch, after the catch.
Yeah.
So
you need somebody that can do something nobody else on your roster can do.
Right.
And do it at a high level, at the pro level. That's what you're looking for.
The thing that's interesting to me, Steve, is right after the Diggs trade, 90% of the calls we took basically said, you got to get up into the top 10, get one of those top three guys now. You have to do it. And now as we've gotten further removed from that trade happening, you got guys like Steve in Syracuse saying, let's just stand pat. We'll be able to get somebody. It's almost like everybody had to calm down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it. They've got some guys. And you and I mean, we probably, and maybe for no good reason.
Well, I think we fell victim to it a little ourselves.
Yeah, for no good reason, we're giving a lot of credit to the guys they've got. You know, Curtis Samuel, Shavers, Shorter, Shakir, Kincaid, Cook, Knox. They got some guys that are proven to be really productive in this league, and some guys that have some potential to be and have been kept around because somebody in the building thinks, somebody who watches them practice thinks they can do it. And I say it again, if we drafted some guys, anybody, even if it's at 28, with the same physical skill set as Shavers or Shorter, everybody be going crazy. Those guys have got – they've got – those guys bring something to the table. And their injuries and the strength of the roster a year ago wouldn't allow them to flourish or be a part of it. So now that deck has been cleared and they're going to – that table's been set for them to sit down and have a meal. And I think they're going to eat in this training camp and in these off-season workouts. They're going to get a chance, some opportunities they did not get last year.
Jumping back on the tweet sheet, J-Mac says, two solid starters and some solid depth with replacement potential in a year or two. I'm pro trading back to add capital and trading for Ayuk or Higgins. As of right now, Higgins, all indications are he is staying on their roster for 2024. The Bengals want to run it back with a healthy Joe Burrow and take one more crack at it with Higgins and Chase on their roster. So it doesn't sound as though he's going to be able to get pried away from Cincinnati. And the 49ers are claiming that Brandon Ayuk is not up for trade. I think they want to keep him on his 50-year option. I don't know if they want to sign him to an extension, but they certainly don't want to trade him. At least those are the indications coming from GM John Lynch. So it doesn't look like they are options as of right now. Cherry Red says, hey, 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 Brownie and Mr. Tasker, we need two good wideouts and one sleeper at any position. Would love to somehow get Roma Dunze, but moving up to 17 to 22 to get big game AD or Brian Thomas, or getting McConkey, or if we're lucky, AD at 28 and Leggett or Pearsall at 60. Wow. You want to get me excited? Get A.D. Mitchell at 28 and then get Leggett or Pearsall at 60? Oh, my gosh. I'd be doing laps around this building if that happens. Oh, my gosh. I really like Pearsall.
Well, our guy Cherry Red here who chimed in, that he knows all the numbers. He knows what buttons to push on Brownie. Let me say that. Because, yeah, you hit all the high spots. Pearsall, Leggett, A.D., McConkey.
Brian Thomas.
Brian Thomas. Yeah, that's – yeah, you hit all the highlights. There you go. And any one, if you get any two of those six guys,
oh, Brownie, it's time to party, man.
Brownie will go home and take a nap.
Yeah.
And wait for training camp.
You're chucking the ball all over the field.
Let's go.
Got to take a break here. Some final thoughts on the Tweet Sheet when we return on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Some final thoughts on the Tweet Sheet here on a Wednesday edition of One Bills Live in terms of the minimum needed out of the Bills' 2024 draft class. Connor says, be able to prove to the coaching staff that they can be week one starters. As we all know, McDermott is not one that likes to start rookies week one, but this year it is a definite need. The youth movement is absolutely necessary, but it only works if the young players can prove it. John says, this needs to be a generational draft for the Bills. End of discussion. John. Serious as a heart attack. Larry says, two or three immediate starters, with others being valuable depth with starting ability. Definitely need starting wide receiver. Must get faster as a team, too. What do you say to the team speed element, Steve?
I'll listen to that.
Well, hold on a second. Curtis Samuel runs a 4.31. We know Isabella runs a 4.31. You get an A.D. Mitchell or a Brian Thomas that runs in the low 4.3s, too? That's
how fast
good.
Is Rasul Douglas? How fast is Christian Benford, though?
Well, Kyir Elam's fast.
He is, but we'll see if he gets on the field. And plus, Mike Edwards, you got Rapp. Mm-hmm. Team speed goes on both sides of the ball. And
true.
I'll listen to that. But yes, you're right. And I'm not saying just one fast guy at the top of the draft is going to do it. You need some guys. You need to stay fresh out there. No question about it.
Don on the tweet sheet says, a down-the-field threat that can stretch the defense so safeties can't be in the box and win 50-50 balls, and a safety in front seven help on defense. Carl says, X receiver, rotational three technique, defensive tackle, potential starting caliber safety, center and depth. Oh, is that all, Carl?
Yeah, that's presto changeo. We're done.
Good Lord.
Let's go, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's maximum, not minimum.
Well, you need some starter. You need at least one starter, don't you? I don't know.
That's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow. More draft coverage.